Hundreds in Belarus protest the election results and the police crackdown. A State Department cable reveals that several years ago, a U.S. contractor warned Lebanese port officials about the risk of the chemicals stored there. Kamala Harris's dad reports that she is of slave-owning descent. You can't make this stuff up. And we kick off the show with an interview with CGM Radio host Bob Siegel about the state of the 2020 election and more. Welcome to World News Brief by CGM Radio. And welcome to this Thursday, August 13th, 2020 edition of World News Brief by CGM Radio, where we bring you the most important, hard-hitting, impactful news of the day and of the week. I'm your host, Winston R. Holland. Thank you so much for joining us. And today is the last day of the week, at least of my broadcast week, and the first week of me doing a daily show. And I've got to say, I have thoroughly enjoyed it. I hope you guys have as well. But this, as I mentioned before, is something that's been in the works a long time and has been a dream of mine. I'm so grateful that we were able to make it work out and that we can bring the most important world news to you every day. So make sure to subscribe on your favorite podcasting app, leave a review, and email me, world@cgmradio.com, with news tips, questions, comments, prayer requests, anything you'd like. I'd love to interact with you there. And remember, all articles, and we're going to, as you heard in the teaser intro, all articles can, including the Belarus protest of the election results and everything, all the articles that we are going to be discussing can be found at cgmradio.com, which has become a news aggregation center, and I'm loving it. So everything myself or any other CGM radio host discuss will be there. Those articles will be linked there. And if they're not on the front page, scroll all the way down. Go to the archives. They are there. And I've been also loving doing the different segments. Mission Monday, Life Tip Tuesday, Wisdom Wednesday, which is our quote of the week section. And then today is, as I've kept secret, but I think you guys might enjoy, today is Theological Thursday, inspired perhaps a bit by the Dennis Prager Ultimate Issues Hour. But I love the idea of ending off the week with a focus on things above. Like the scripture says, to set our minds on things above, not on the things of the earth. Now, that doesn't mean that we don't think about anything that's here on the earth. But what I think that scripture is saying is that our overall lives need to be set, and what we're all about, what our focus and what we're all about is the kingdom of God. And so I love the idea of ending off with that, and we're going to do a couple things that are they're news and spiritual related. Now, when I say theological Thursdays, a lot of times when people think of theology, they're thinking of systematic theology, where you have a textbook and there's the doctrine of God and the doctrine of the Bible and the doctrine of Christ, the doctrine of salvation and doctrine of the end. That's not necessarily what I'm referring to. I'm using the term in a very broad sense to just talk just the subject matter of God, the things of God is what we are going for with that. So without further ado, here is my interview with Bob Siegel from this morning. All right, we are extremely blessed to have back to the show Bob Siegel, CGM radio host of The Bob Siegel Show. He is an author, columnist, speaker, Christian apologist, pastor, and as we learned on the previous interview, ambassador, former ambassador to France, Ambassador Siegel. Welcome back to World News Brief.
Forgot that I made my ambassador to France joke, but...
No, it's great. It's great to have you back. A Bob Show has been a daily show for what, about 3 weeks now here on the CGM Network?
I mean, daily, I've done at least three. We're getting almost close to, I think, four since going daily. For a while, I was on about twice a week. Yeah.
Yeah, and so that's how we
did pretty quickly.
Oh, and I love the, again, as we've talked about, I love the eclectic nature of the show. There's Bible, apologetics, politics, social commentary. So be sure to check that out. But I asked Bob to come on yesterday because obviously with the selection of Kamala Harris, I was a bit surprised, but we'll get in. But with the selection of her and the state of the race and really where everything is going, I wanted to get Bob's thoughts on this because he obviously follows this very well. He is along with being a Christian apologist and Bible scholar, he is a political commentator. And so Bob, I'm kind of curious, who did you think? But before Biden selected Kamala Harris, who were you kind of guessing would be the VP pick?
I didn't have it refined to a specific person, but I had it refined to the way I knew they were going to refine it. He was going to pick a Black woman, an African-American woman. So whether it was Kamala Harris or Susan Rice or somebody else, the woman that wanted to be governor of Georgia. So now Kamala Harris, oh, by the way, I should warn everybody, make sure you pronounce the name correctly. It's Kamala.
Oh, my goodness.
Tucker Carlson got into an awful lot of trouble for pronouncing it Kamala. They were all over MSNBC calling him a racist for pronouncing.
Yeah, I saw something about that this morning. It is absolutely, they are, you know, people think America is so racist. But if America was as racist as the left wants it to be, because they really want it to be racist, they wouldn't need the microaggressions. They wouldn't need, to call all these microaggressions racist. If you say you're colorblind, you're racist. And they wouldn't need to jump onto Tucker Carlson for the racism of mispronouncing a name.
Exactly. If they had real things to go by, why would they pick on stuff like that? But I want to help everybody in the audience. I have my own way of describing her name, and that's Chameleon Harris. She changes her positions constantly. Now, she's a nightmare, an unmitigated nightmare. But frankly, Ryan, anybody he would have picked, anybody in the Democratic Party, Bernie Sanders and Cortez, they've driven them so far over the cliff to the left that no matter who he picked, they're all going to be saying the same things. They're all just a bunch of parrots. So there's nothing about it that surprises me. She did really horribly in the primaries, obviously, was one of the first to drop out, even though she was considered the rising star. So some are saying, oh, well, her own Democratic electorate rejected her. Well, yeah, that's true, but none of that matters. The strategy, the political strategy is quite simple. At least we're not Trump. And the reason they put in Kamala Harris, is evil as she is, and she's quite evil, at least she could string a sentence or two together, and she could walk from one side of the room to the other. So at least she's not Joe Biden.
Yeah, and he obviously needed somebody with who was younger, with some energy, with something that could, appeal to the radical base and get the radical base excited. But interestingly, you know, she really wasn't all that popular ultimately when it came down to who the Democrats voted for. So I guess my question to you would be, do you think Kamala helps or hurts his chances of winning when you take into account especially those who are maybe the swing voters, what are called moderates, and in terms of ginning up the Democrat base, was she the best pick to accomplish that?
Well, I can't predict who's going to win in November, but unfortunately, I will say she helps because, again, anybody with half a brain is going to help Biden. The Democrats and a lot of the so-called moderates, I remind me later to get into my, and I may have done it on a previous show, my belief that the moderate doesn't really exist anymore, but the so-called moderates, the so-called independents, you just never know how they're going to vote because they'll do it based on who smiled more in a debate or what kind of tie they were wearing
or what kind of toothpaste
they use. If we're all the term independent, they're not really independent in their thinking. But as far as playing to their base, the leftists, they filled the bill. Some will argue she's not really African-American because she comes from Jamaica.
It's not quite Africa.
Yeah, but there were African slaves brought to Jamaica years ago.
Okay.
I believe, as part of it. So who knows how that gets spun. Well, but she's got the correct skin color for the Democratic Party, and she's a woman, and so she's invulnerable. You and I could start listing a bunch of her abhorrent statements and policies, and she changes her mind as much as Joe Biden. She knows, you know, Biden's never had a genuine conviction about anything. Either has Kamala Harris. So what's the difference between them? Again, one is coherent, the other is not. One is a woman, the other is not. One is black, the other is not. The Democrats are not thinking that they're voting for Biden. They're thinking that they're voting for her. And that's what she's thinking. It's very possible, Ryan, that by the time the nomination process is over and he still hasn't been officially nominated, he could drop out right at the convention, wherever they hold their convention, on Zoom or some bunker somewhere. He could drop out right there. She could end up being the nominee. If that doesn't happen and they're both on the ticket, people will still feel they're voting for her. If he actually stays in office a whole year, they'll still assume she's the one really making the policy, along with Bernie Sanders and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
God help us.
And he himself has said he wouldn't run for a second term, but she's probably not planning on him being around long.
Yeah, well, he's even described himself as a transition candidate. Like he's the bridge from what has historically been the Democrat Party and Democratic Party positions, at least in modern times, we could say post-LBJ. He's kind of the last relic of that vintage Democratic just pedigree, and that he's the transition guy to the radicals, to the Kamala Harris's, to Cortez, to Rashida Tlaib and Ilhan Omar, and these people that are rabidly anti-American, that hate, I consider them just enemies of the United States that are in our Congress. So what would a Kamala Harris presidency and administration look like?
It would look like whatever the hard left constituents want it to look like. And if somehow the winds blew the other way and she felt that the Democratic Party was getting more conservative, which I think is impossible at this time, but hypothetically, if she took the temperature of the country after she got into office, and it looked like the mood swing was going the other way, she would adjust. She just wants to be president. Biden just wants to be president.
Right.
Even if he's only president for 5 minutes, he's wanted to be president all his life. He's proven it by losing one presidential race after another. And then Obama goes and picks him. I know people are talking about Joe's senility. In my mind, the jury is still out on that because he lies through his teeth. And to be able to construct a lie, you have to have something working in your brain. I will say that he's a blithering idiot and has been for years. He's always been dumb as a post and always made incredibly stupid statements. And yet he somehow gets away with it because what he has had, particularly at debates, is charisma. And that's about all he's had.
Right.
And he uses that charisma. When he got in that debate with Paul Ryan, and believe me, I'm no lover of Paul Ryan or Mitt Romney right now, but certainly I was favoring them over Obama's reelection. And when Joe Biden got into that debate with Paul Ryan and constantly interrupted him, I went on my column that I was writing back then, and I just said he had the manners of a swine, and I got all kinds of hate mail for saying that. But I'll say it again, his behavior was absolutely swinish. That has not changed that much. He may be struggling with some kind of genuine dementia now. And if he is in that component of his life, I will express sympathy. But there's a lot of stuff about the old Joe Biden that we're still seeing. He's always been an empty suit. Even if he weren't going senile, hypothetically, he would still be somebody who would have allowed himself to get pushed all the way over
right,
to the left.
Right.
He's done it again and again. So we got two people on the ticket, neither of which really truly stand for anything, but one of them comes across as being very bright and articulate. And she is bright and she is articulate. But you know who else was bright and articulate? Adolf Hitler. He's considered one of the brightest and most charismatic orators we've ever had. I'm not saying she's as bad as Hitler, although, when you look at what the Nazis did at the end with the death camps, obviously it's unfair to compare anybody to the Nazis at that stage. But you look at the Nazis in their early stage with the euthanasia, with the anti-Semitism, with the way their fascists came into power, very similar to what Antifa, the so-called anti-fascists, are doing now. You go to the early Nazis, there's tons of comparisons. So I realize the word Nazi gets used and bantered around so much, but I'm somebody who's studied the real Nazis. Having grown up Jewish, I'm very aware of what the real honest-to-goodness Nazis stood for. And I'm telling you, the Democratic Party, at least in early embryonic form, is another form of the Nazi Party. And don't forget, Nazi stood for National Socialists.
Yeah. Well, and that's what we're seeing with Antifa. I've heard many times them compared with the Hitler's brown shirts.
Yeah, but, very, very similar to the brown shirts. Absolutely.
Now, people hear that. If you could maybe explain real quick who the brown shirts were and how that compares to Antifa today.
Well, it compares in the sense that when the Nazis were coming into power in the 1930s, they were viewed by a lot of the Germans as just a bunch of thugs and vandals that did terrorist-type intimidation. It was very much like whether we call it Antifa or Antifa, what Antifa's doing now. And they gave themselves an innocuous name. The name means we're anti-fascist.
Right.
We'll not find a more fascist organization. And that's the Democrats' trick. They give themselves these innocuous titles. People go, well, dude, how could Antifa be fascist? They call themselves anti-fascist, so they can't be fascist. And they're hoping you're just that stupid. Same with Black Lives Matter. There's all kinds of African Americans that object to the organization Black Lives Matter. They wouldn't resist the statement Black Lives Matter, but the statement and the organization have absolutely nothing to do with each other. But again, it's an innocuous title. You criticize Black Lives Matter, oh, you hate black people. Well, then how do you explain the many black people who criticize Black Lives Matter? But they're hoping you won't think it two notches up the ladder.
Right, right. It's amazing how they give themselves these innocent sounding names to basically shield themselves and protect themselves from any criticism to where they, well, you know, we're Antifa, so we're not fascist. But when you see videos of these Antifa thugs dressed mostly white, I don't think I've ever seen a black Antifa member. Mostly white, head to toe, in mass. They are just yelling and screaming and cursing profanities along with the vandalism. They look like just like crazed, just demons in human form. It's really disturbing when you see some of the stuff of these videos. That's what I wanted to ask you about about Antifa specifically, although they're involved, but Black Lives Matter held a pro-looting rally in Chicago. About 100 were arrested from last that I saw. They denounced the arrests of looters, and they came out and they said, I don't care. This is a quote from Black Lives Matter organizer Ariel Atkins. This isn't just some random person within Black Lives Matter. This is an organizer. Quote, I don't care if somebody decides to loot Gucci or Macy's or a Nike, because that makes sure that that person eats. That makes sure that that person has clothes. That is reparations. Anything they want to take, take it. Because these businesses have insurance. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I heard her on the news last night, and you're very well representing even the tone that horrible tone that she had. The problem with reparations is if you were to sit down with anybody that asks for reparations and ask them to define it, well, when will we be square? When will reparations be paid? Reparations for slavery is what they're saying. We had a whole civil war where many people in the North died liberating slaves. Many people in the South died. And you could perhaps properly call that a judgment from God because of the slavery. The Jim Crow laws and the segregation is now against the law. When will we be square? And you'll get a different answer from every person because nobody knows. I've heard everything from money to land redistribution to homes should be confiscated. And now somebody's using it to justify rioting and looting in a store. Why? Because they've been emboldened. Somebody said this yesterday, some commentator on the radio, and it was very, very obvious, but very, very pungent comment that the difference between the rioting in the 60s and the rioting today is that in those days, even the Democrats and Republicans would have both agreed that we need law and order. Right. You might have had one party more sympathetic to the rioters, but everybody believed that vandalism, rioting, and it's gone beyond that, murder. And most of the people getting murdered in these riots are Black people. Most of the people who do not want to see the police defunded are Black people. Some good news has come up, and I don't recall if this was Chicago, but it was in one of the major cities where there was a Black Lives Matter rally. A lot of the African-American residents of the cities came and pardon my cleaned up French. That. They said, get the Kicked F out of here. When babies get killed, you don't say anything. You only mention something when police shoot people. When a thug shoots people, you don't seem to care that Black Lives Matter. So that's a really piece of good news and a resistance, yes. A volcanic resistance we're seeing from the Black community.
Well, and they're seeing that the leftist politicians, the Democrat politicians, are not denouncing. They're not denouncing Black Lives Matter and Antifa at all. So if I hope these people are making the connection. I think some of them at least will make the connection between who's in power right now that is behind the destruction of the cities, or they're silent about the destruction of the cities, and those who are against it, which President Trump has been very much, very vocal, very bold. I'm so grateful during this time that we have President Trump, because I don't know of many other politicians, if any at all, would have stood up that, yeah, okay, you call yourselves Black Lives Matter, but I'm not going to let that stop me from speaking the truth that this is thuggishness, this is violence, this is evil. I don't know. I would hope that a George Bush or a Mitt Romney, but Mitt Romney went marching along with the protesters.
Yeah, Mitt Romney's showing us the kind of president he would have been right now. He's just nothing but a kiss up. Absolutely. You get back to the emboldening and the empowering. How about the mayor of Seattle when they confiscated that area, literally declaring it free from the United States? That was reason to bring federal troops in immediately. That was not, I mean, it was done in a more thuggish way. But legally, it was no different than when the states of the South seceded from the Union. And what does the mayor say? Oh, it's going to be a summer of love. Then she got concerned when they showed up at her house. And of course, these mayors, they're defunding the police, but then they're hiring police to protect them and their estates, where they have walls, where they have all the things that they're saying that we shouldn't have at our border, where they have policemen, all the things they want to defund. I mean, to say that it's hypocritical, that word doesn't even do justice anymore. The word hypocrisy doesn't even fit in the same stratosphere with all that's going on.
Oh, absolutely. It's when,
just so far beyond that.
When you're dealing with the results of violence, of really you're taking things away from people. That, you know, one of the criticisms that Republicans get is that you're only pro-life when it comes to people in the womb. You're not pro the Democrats are pro-life for people who are outside of the womb. And I think the more we have seen 2020, which I wonder if 1984 should have been named 2020, because this has been the year of 1984. Yeah. But when you
Orwell was so brilliant in his predictions, and no, it didn't happen in 1984, although we were well on the way. But sure. It was the year 1984. He was just picking a year from the future.
Right, exactly.
And everything he talked about, from historical revision to changing our language to
it's been happening. It's been happening, and it's been coming. It's been happening slowly and incrementally, and with COVID and with the George Floyd tragedy, which isn't talked about very much anymore, if at all. It's become really nothing about George Floyd. we're seeing just we're seeing everything, all this stuff from the past several years they've been wanting to do kind of come to fruition in one. And Bob, I wanted to get last thing I wanted to ask you about and talk to you about is a couple things. First would be just an update. How are things in, because you're based out of California, San Diego, California. What's the state of the lockdown? I know places like California and New York are just trying to lock things down and put the squeeze on, and while other states are trying to do the exact opposite. So what is the state of the lockdown there? And also saw recently that John MacArthur stood up to Gavin Newsom, called it a protest, a peaceful protest in his church service. So I'd love for you to comment on both of those things.
Yeah, well, brilliant for calling it a protest, because the Democrats don't know what to say when it's a protest.
I've
been joking that they should burn the American flag and put up a sign that says "We hate Trump" and "Black Lives Matter," and then just go inside and worship. The government won't do anything. But the situation in California, and this is true of so many other states, it's constant moving goalposts, except that it's gone up, it's gone back, it's gone sideways. When you and Justin were out here, the restaurants had opened up again. Now, the word "opened up" is in quotes. You still had to wear a mask until you got to your table, but you could at least go indoors. I was able to return to my routine of going to a coffee shop, although the Starbucks were not opened up for indoor seating. I was finding little mom and pop coffee shops. It lasted 2 or 3 weeks, and now they've gone back to you can only meet outdoors again. Churches were allowed to open up for a couple of weeks, but again, 25% occupancy, masks. I mean, that I always dreaded the opening up more than the lockdown, because I never believed we'd see real opening up. And that has become the case. So churches were allowed to meet indoors with all those restrictions. Now they're not even allowed to do that. The good news is that pastors, you mentioned John MacArthur, that's one of them. Pastors all over California are resisting. There's still a lot that are compromising. We're still getting these sanctimonious lectures about obeying Romans 13 as if that's the only
unbelievable
chapter in the Bible. If any of your guests get a chance, I had two guests, Dr. Jim Garla, who was the pastor of Skyline for many years, and Dr. Everett Piper, who was the president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University, two men who've been warning the country about this for the longest time. Both have gotten a lot of flack from other evangelical pastors. Pastor Garlow was part of a rally downtown where pastors were protesting, and then rushed to get on my radio show. The new pastor of Skyline, Jeremy McGarity, he has been holding services in defiance, and there have been threats. We haven't seen anything happen yet at Skyline, but we have been going back and meeting at church, and which technically we're not allowed to do. Other churches throughout California are doing it. I'm of the belief that if enough pastors do it, they'll back off. There was one church, I don't recall the name, but they were told this was a big one, and the government knew they couldn't arrest everybody, so they said there was going to be a citation given to the first 1,000 that showed up. When the government used that kind of bravado, extra people showed
right.
up, people that didn't even go to that church.
Exactly.
And to my knowledge, last I heard, Ryan, and it constantly changes the news, but last I heard, they did not, in fact, cite 1,000 people. It just goes to show that when people stand up to the government will back down. And
yes.
We're not talking about standing up to good governments or breaking laws or breaking anything that would have to do with our Constitution. We're talking about standing up to tyrannical government that's no longer abiding by the Constitution.
Yeah, and if we all, that's the thing, if we all stand up, if all the churches stood up to the tyranny, if we all stood up to the tyranny, there's nothing they can do about it. They can't arrest millions of people. They can't shutter thousands of churches. They physically cannot do it. And so if we all stand up, especially at this point in American history, at this point, we can stand up, and it's more than likely, most likely not, there's not going to be a physical response from the government. They're likely, you know, they're not going to shoot us or at most a few may be arrested or something like that. But if we all stand up and they see that we consistently stand up against these tyrannical governors, these tyrannical mayors, then there really is nothing they can do about it. This is a government of the people, by the people, for the people. They are the lawbreakers. They are the ones taking away our constitutional rights. This is not a kingdom. This is a constitutional republic, which means the Constitution is king, and that is and the people elect representatives to uphold that Constitution. So it's Gavin Newsom, not the pastor of Skyline Church, not John MacArthur, that is the lawbreaker.
That is so well put. The lawbreakers are the governors and the mayors. And the reverse is also true. Why were they able to get an entire country to shut down its economy and its republic and our own constitutional rights over a disease with a 99% recovery rate, with all respect to those who've really gotten this disease? And I know you have, Ryan, and you were struggling for a week, and God bless you that you're doing better. We're not saying that it isn't real, but it does have a 99% recovery rate. We've shut down our whole republic. Why did they get away with this? Because the people went along.
That's right.
The people have been docile. Now Anthony Fauci's talking about wanting us to wear goggles as well as a mask. Well, they're coming up with that stuff because we went along with the masks. And next we'll have to wear the entire Darth Vader helmet. They'll never be satisfied. Absolute power corrupts absolutely, as the old saying goes, and it's such an accurate saying. When people go along with it, nothing's enough. Same with, again, the mayors and the governors that are emboldening these thugs. If they embolden them, nothing will be enough. It started off with vandalizing some buildings, and then the next thing you know, they're pulling people out of their cars, beating them to a pulp, shooting people. They're murdering policemen. They're murdering babies, toddlers, and they're still being called a peaceful rally. And the more they're called that, the more they're emboldened, the more they will do. So when we ask the question, when will enough be enough? Enough will never, ever be enough when we have enablers and emboldeners. It goes back to the battered wife syndrome. The wife whose husband beats her, well, she's partly responsible because she tells herself she's responsible. She says, well, maybe there's something I did. Maybe I made him angry. No, it was nothing you did. It was what he did. But if you embolden him by making excuses for him, if you refuse to press charges every time he buys you flowers and says, I'm sorry, then your emboldening does, in an ironic way, enable him. But initially, it's his fault, and something should be done about him.
Well,
and on a cosmic scale, we're seeing that played out in our country and around the world. We did it with terrorism, with 9/11. People are going, gee, what did we do? What did we as Americans do to make them hate us so much, to destroy the World Trade Center and the Pentagon and kill 3,000 people? Maybe we did nothing. Maybe they were just evil. Maybe they were feeling emboldened.
And maybe they hated our freedom. Maybe they hated our constitutional rights. Maybe they hated our way of life, which is not evil. The Constitution is not evil. And maybe they just simply hate Western civilization. And maybe just like Muhammad, the prophet, they're conquistadors, and they're seeking to dominate the world for Islam.
And that's their own statement. That's what they claim. That's what Muhammad taught. That's what's in the Quran. That's what's in the Hadiths. Their Sharia law is not compatible with our Constitution. I realize they weren't the subject today, but it makes a great example because they watch us. When they see a country brought to its knees over the flu, and well, let's just call it the flu because it's a kind of flu.
That's right.
How much do you think their minds are churning that America might be a much easier mark to conquer than they had previously thought?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I could not have put it better than that. And unfortunately, we're out of time. Bob and I could do this for hours, but make sure to check out the Bob Siegel Show, which is daily Monday through Friday right here on the CGM Radio Network. Go to cgmradio.com and you'll be able to find a link to a show. And a big link is on the CGM Radio homepage to Bob's interview with Jim Everett. And Everett Piper and Jim Garlow. Very, very, very important interview. Bob, as always, thanks for coming on the show. It was great to have you.
Ryan, it's always a pleasure.
And yes, of course, blacks are just getting completely tired of their neighborhoods getting ravaged by this all-white Antifa group. It's amazing that this is who's partnering with the left. So, of course, they're pushing back. And you even had the radical mayor, Ross Baraka, who's associated with the Nation of Islam, apparently who he took over in Newark after Cory Booker left the post, coming out and saying that police defunding is a bourgeois solution. The bourgeois in a communist sense, you have the Politburo, who's the ruling party. You have the proletariat, that's like the worker class, the teeming masses. Then you have the bourgeois, you know, the upper class, the privileged, and so forth. He called defunding the police a bourgeois solution. This is a radical black mayor saying that's the solution of the upper classes. So, when you even have guys like him that are coming out and saying that defunding the police is a bad idea, you know you're probably on a losing ticket. Now, as promised, I'm going to hit a few world news stories. Hundreds in Belarus protest election results, police crackdown. Now, if you're not familiar with where exactly Belarus is, it is just east of Poland. It is south of Lithuania, north of Ukraine. They are right on the border of Russia. So it's there. It's in the heart of the eastern border of Europe. And apparently there's been quite a bit going on there as well. And it's very difficult. This is world news. I could pick things from all over the world, but I saw this. And I thought it was very, very interesting because this kind of stuff's going, similar type stuff that's going on here is, of course, going on around the world. This is from the Associated Press. Hundreds of women rallied across Belarus's capital on August 12th to protest a brutal police crackdown that has left hundreds injured and thousands detained while challenging election results, extending the, are you ready for this, 26-year rule of the country's authoritarian leader. In several parts of Minsk, groups of women formed human chains, chanting shame and calling for an end to the crackdown in a bid to soften the ruthless official response to peaceful protests. That's the thing, and I've said this before. If the protests are peaceful, they can protest anything they want. They can protest the government should be giving me $1 million a day, and they're not doing it, and they're shouting, and they're wearing all kinds of funny hats, money hats, right? Just like what President said about the women's march here in the U.S. They're sitting there calling him a fascist right outside the White House while he's there in the Oval Office tweeting that they have every right to peacefully protest and say whatever they want. You're going to call him a fascist? Fascists don't let the masses speak out against them. Hesitant to use force against all women rallies, police disperse them without violence. Protesters are contesting the official count showing President Alexander Lukashenko winning a sixth term with, you ready for this, 80% of the August 9th vote and the main opposition challenger with 10%. Come on. Come on. If you're going to fake an election, you need to do a little bit better job in that. At least make it close. Crowds have taken to the streets every night since the demand to a recount. Authorities have responded with a crackdown that was unusually brutal, even for Lukashenko's authoritarian rule. Police have dispersed protesters with tear gas, stun grenades, water cannons, and rubber bullets, and severely beat them with truncheons. Black uniformed officers chased protesters into residential buildings and deliberately targeted journalists, beating many and breaking their cameras. Quote, we stand for peaceful protest, said Ksenia Ilyasevich, a 23-year-old IT specialist. We worked up the courage and came out to rally. We stand here for all. Another demonstrator, 29-year-old boy, these Belarusian names are challenging. I will just say, they just said, quote, we worked up the courage. I'm sorry. We need to support each other when the authorities beat us. In three nights of protests, at least 6,000 people have been detained and hundreds injured, according to the official count. But even that high toll appeared to downplay the crackdown scope. Anguished relatives were besieging prisons across Belarus trying to find their missing relatives. Now, of course, this is from the AP. This is a particular point of view that all of the protests are peaceful, that nobody has gone outside the bounds at all of peaceful protesting, and that police are the only bad guys here. Now, that might be the case. I'm not on the ground, so all I can do is I can report the protesting, I can report the 80% vote count, and I think I can reasonably conclude that most likely that is not a legitimate vote. But in terms of peaceful, is it all peaceful protesting? I simply don't know, but this is from the AP. I don't just get my news from conservative sources. I try to read between the lines. So, but that's going on in Belarus. Please remember Belarus in your prayers, because it's there's not just distress and protesting going on here in the U.S. It's happening elsewhere as well. Quick Lebanon update. U.S. contractor told Lebanese port official of chemicals risk. Here we go. About 4 years. This also is from the AP. About 4 years before the Beirut port explosion that killed dozens of people and injured thousands, the U.S. government contractor expressed concern to a Lebanese port official about unsafe storage there of the volatile chemicals that fueled last week's devastating blast, American officials said Tuesday. There is no indication the contractor communicated his concerns to anyone in the U.S. government. His assessment was noted briefly in a four-page State Department cable first reported by the New York Times. The cable, labeled sensitive but unclassified, dealt largely with the Lebanese responses to the blast and the origins and disposition of the ammonium nitrate, which ignited to create an enormous explosion. But it also noted that after the August 4th explosion, a person who had advised the Lebanese Navy under a U.S. Army contract from 2013 to 2016 told the State Department that he had, quote, conducted a port facility inspection on security measures, during which he reported to port officials on the unsafe storage of ammonium nitrate. Concerns about the ammonium nitrate were known within the Lebanese government before the deadly blast, officials said. So you had someone way back then that noted this, that warned the Lebanese port officials, but for whatever reason, nothing was done about it. The contractor, who was not identified by name and is now a State Department employee based in Ukraine, was in Lebanon to provide instruction to members of the Lebanese Navy. While there, he made a brief, impromptu inspection of physical security at the facility in 2015 or 2016 at the request of a port official, U.S. officials said. The contractor was not identified. So we're finding out, as more details are unveiled, we're finding out that what was happening, the problem, the issue of the storage of the ammonium nitrate there in the port in Beirut, which shouldn't have been there at all, because that tanker had been tied up there since 2013, shouldn't have been there at all, shouldn't have been stored there at all, was stored unsafely. They were even warned about it. And just sadly, another reason why the people of Lebanon are fed up with this government that is derelicted its duty and is not taking care of them. So pray for Lebanon. Now, I wanted, before we get to Theology Thursday, I wanted to touch on something that Bob and I discussed briefly in the interview, which was this idea that Kamala Harris's ancestors were slave owners. It's almost like you really can't make this stuff up. That here we have, and it was like the Babylon Bee satire story that I read yesterday up at, it's up at cgmradio.com, but it's old white man and cop essentially are defending, and the leaders of the party of the oppressed. You know, everything that the left is apparently against, that is who is leading the Democrat Party ticket. I don't know about you, but when it comes to when it comes to voter excitement, I don't know. Maybe they are. Maybe they don't care. Maybe they just put that aside, put aside the fact that she called herself the top cop of California. Maybe they put that aside and just forget about it, but I don't know. They got an old white guy, and they got a ruthless cop who actually withheld information that could have freed an innocent man in order to get another prosecution. Are they going to gin up the base of the Democrat Party? Are they going to get those 22-year-olds out there voting? I report, you decide. This is from the Western Journal. Unbeknownst to many, Harris was the ancestor of prominent Jamaican slave owners, according to her father. The news had first broken on January 13, 2019, when Jamaica Global published a lengthy ancestry article written in September 2018 by Harris's father, the prominent economist and Stanford University professor Donald Harris. Born in British Jamaica himself before coming to the United States in 1963, the professor had contributed his 3,000-word article to the site, which highlights the, quote, Jamaican diaspora and its descendants worldwide in an effort to reflect, quote, on the Jamaicanness of his daughter, Kamala. According to the professor's own account, he, his paternal grandmother, and, by extension, his daughter were all descended from Jamaican plantation owner and Brownstown founder, Hamilton Brown. Quote, my roots go back within my lifetime to my paternal grandmother, Miss Chrissy, Christina Brown, descendant of Hamilton Brown, who is on record as plantation and slave owner and founder of Brownstown. Quote, the Harris name comes from my paternal grandfather, Joseph Alexander Harris, landowner and agricultural, quote, produce exporter, who died in 63, 2 years before I was born, and is buried in the churchyard of the magnificent Anglican church which Hamilton Brown built in Brownstown. A Jamaican Records archive unearthed in July 2019 by the Washington Free Beacon did reveal that in 1817, Hamilton Brown owned a substantial number of slaves, some of whom were African while others were Creole. But according to Snopes, no explicit evidence of the genealogical connection has ever been provided by the professor. So, of course, this is when, if you're going to claim to be a fact checker, but everything that you fact check confirms your confirmation bias for one party or the other, you're not a legitimate fact checker. And how come Snopes couldn't get into the Jamaican Records archive? This was all it took for some prominent conservative commentators and political operatives to revive the story, citing it as a major irony, given the fact that it would make Harris a compulsory donor to, rather than a recipient of, the American left's long-supported slavery reparations plan. Quote, did you know, according to Kamala Harris's father, her family descends from 19th century slave owners in Jamaica? Turning Point USA founder Charlie Kirk wrote on Twitter, quote, does she still support reparations, or is she going to claim that she can't be held responsible for the sins of her ancestor now? I agree that Kamala Harris in no way, shape, or form should be held responsible for something her great-grandparents did, or great-great-grandparents, or whatever beyond that. But I also don't believe that I should be held responsible. If I have slave-owning genealogy, I should not be held, nor should you, nor should any of us. We didn't own the slaves. But it's like we should be held responsible and forced to pay reparations. So the question is, should Kamala Harris have to pay reparations? It's truly amazing. Should Kamala Harris be canceled because she is the direct beneficiary of a slave-owning lineage? Just like the Democrat Party apparently should be canceled because of its past support of slavery, its past support of Jim Crow. I guess we need to cancel Kamala Harris as well, and we really do need to. November 3rd, for the sake of the Republic. All right, longer show today, but you've got all weekend to listen to. You got tomorrow to listen to it. Yesterday was a bit of a longer show as well. I don't know if these 20, 30-minute things are going to work out, but I'm going to have to figure something out. There's so much I want to talk about, but like I said, you got all weekend to figure it out. So Monday, we did Mission Monday, where we talk about the plight of persecuted Christians around the world, something having to do with the mission of the church around the world. Tuesday was Life Tip Tuesday, and I kicked that off with the theme of wisdom, which would be for the rest of the week, because this is the very first week of broadcast. I wanted to set a solid foundation, so Life Tip Tuesday had to do with how to get wisdom in 3 minutes or less, so make sure to check out Tuesday's show. Wednesday is where the quote of the week is going to be placed and held each week. So Wisdom Wednesday, quote of the week. And because the theme is wisdom, we went to the Proverbs chapter 8, which is one of my favorite chapters, probably my favorite chapter about wisdom. Wisdom is personified, and wisdom as a woman, personified as a woman who speaks against the adulterous woman in chapter 7, who calls men to evil. Well, wisdom in chapter 8 is now personified as a woman who calls men to be wise, to not be foolish, to not be ignorant, to not engage in evil, but choose what is good. Beautiful, beautiful chapter. Read it when you get a chance. And so for today, as I mentioned earlier, is our segment for today is going to be Theological Thursday. And like I said, it's not like systematic theology. I'm not talking about necessarily academic stuff, although that could come up from time to time. But let's end off the week. The Bible says to set our minds on things above, not on things of this earth. Let's end off the week with the focus on the spiritual. But this week, I'm going to kind of combine the two, because there's some news. There's some news that I also alluded to on the Bob Siegel interview that we discussed. And there's also some news about the Biebers that I couldn't help but share that I came across this morning that I think will delight you. But first, there was a story, a video put out by the scoop.us, which has just a ton of wonderful, great videos. I follow them on Instagram. But I wanted to share this one with you where John MacArthur calls his church a peaceful protest. I'll have this video linked at cgmradio.com as well, so you can find the link to it there. But it's definitely worth listening to. There are a few times where it's silent and it gives text, so I'll narrate when they're not talking and there's text on the screen. But check this out. This is, I think, a beautiful way to kick off Theological Thursday.
Good morning, everyone. I'm so happy to welcome you to the Grace Community Church Peaceful Protest.
Come on now. Come on. I love it. Thank you, Pastor. This is leadership. This is leadership, ladies and gentlemen. That's what it is. Leadership. Hello. Come on, church. Let's do this. Let's stand up to the tyranny. If we all stand up, they can't do nothing.
Are you glad to be here?
Yes, so. Pastor. Hallelujah. In response to local and state governments restricting religious gatherings, Pastor John MacArthur declared his sermon a, quote, peaceful protest.
Everything for us based on the Word of God, right? And that means we are pro-life.
Yes.
Pro-family.
Yes.
Pro-law and order.
Yes.
And pro-Church of the Lord Jesus Christ. This morning, we have a very special privilege. Chaplain Morehouse from the LAPD is going to come and lead us in our opening prayer.
So so cool. So cool. We're bringing a police officer. Listen to the crowd. A police officer in to the peaceful protest to find the lawlessness of Gavin Newsom.
Good morning. As the pastor said, I am Chaplain Morehouse with the Los Angeles Police Department Chaplain Corps. I would like to share two verses of scripture with you and then pray for the church. Psalm 91:14. Because he loves me, says the Lord, I will rescue him. I will protect him, for he acknowledges my name. James 1:5. If any of you lack wisdom, you should ask God, who gives generously to all without finding fault.
Well, and when I saw that the chaplain was reading that verse, I, of course, okay, this has to be a part of the theme of the week, which is wisdom. But so great to see Pastor John MacArthur and Grace Community Church in California standing up to the tyranny and lawlessness of Gavin Newsom. Now, when I say this, I still say, look, pray for Gavin Newsom. The book of Proverbs also says, we're talking about wisdom, the book of Proverbs says that the heart of the king is like channels of water in the hands of the Lord. He turns it wherever he wishes. And my Bible says that he hears the prayers of his people, that if we ask in faith, he'll give to us if it's in accordance with his will. So ask in faith and believe for Gavin Newsom. We're supposed to love our enemies, even Gavin Newsom, but that does not mean that we are not supposed to stand up for the tyranny. All right, the last piece of, and speaking of, look, nobody is outside the bounds of the grace of God. Nobody. I even heard recently that, I don't know if it's, I need to confirm this, but President Trump prayed to receive Christ from someone who would be in the know. So nobody is outside the bounds of the grace of God. One of the biggest, in my mind, the two biggest biblical examples of this would be Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, would be Cyrus, king of Persia, who, as we know, allowed the Jews to go back and to rebuild Jerusalem. And even pop stars, even movie stars, even those in the entertainment industry. We saw it big, big, big with Kanye West, and we're going to need a Kanye presidential run update soon. But we're seeing it with Justin Bieber. Justin Bieber and his wife, Haley Baldwin, celebrate joint baptism. Confess faith in Jesus. This is from Western Journal. Justin Bieber is a household name, perhaps because he enjoyed fame at a young age. As he grew, thanks to his celebrity status, his mistakes and poor choices were incredibly public. But he didn't stop there. He kept living. He kept growing. And, surprising many, he became a Christian. Now Bieber is just as public about his faith and understanding of Jesus as he was about purely worldly topics before. Quote, I really took a deep dive into my faith. I believed in Jesus, but I never really, like, when it says following Jesus is actually turning away from sin. And so there's no, what it talks about in the Bible, there's no faith without obedience, he told Apple Music's Zane Lowe in February. Bieber was raised as a Christian, but says his understanding of God was knowledge without real faith. Now he is putting his belief on full display. Quote, Jesus is the answer to our shame, guilt, condemnation, jealousy, bitterness, unforgiveness, selfishness. The list goes on. He shared on Instagram on July 31st. Quote, Jesus came to bring healing. Quote, I don't know what idea of Jesus you have, but Jesus came to save us. He came to sacrifice himself on the cross so that you and I could have a way out. Jesus took the punishment of our wrongs so that we can walk with God with no insecurities or shame, so we can walk in the fullness of all that God has for us. Now, both he and his wife, Haley Baldwin, have followed Jesus in baptism, and they shared the news and proof on social media on Wednesday. Quote, the moment at Haley Bieber, my wife and I got baptized together, he shared. This is one of the most special moments of my life, confessing our love and trust in Jesus publicly with our friends and family. 4 years ago, If I had told you Justin Bieber was going to do that, would you have believed me? Probably not. Say, well, how do you know? Right? Of course, I didn't know. But it's just further proof that nobody is outside the grace of God. Nobody is too much of a sinner for God to accept. Nobody has done too much of a horrible particular thing or things for God to go, nope, you're too sinful. I can't save you. He came to seek and save that which was lost. And everybody's lost, which means he came to save everybody, including you and me. And if you want to read more about that, I encourage you to go to cgmradio.com. Click on Great News. It's in the toolbar, in the middle of the toolbar of the homepage on cgmradio.com. Click on Great News. And that goes in detail about what the gospel is and how to be saved. So be sure to check that out. All right, well, that wraps up week number one of World News Brief Daily Edition. I have had a blast doing it. Thank you guys so much for joining me on this journey. Make sure to send me any feedback or comments to world@cgmradio.com. Get me on Twitter and Parler @WorldNewsCGM. And of course, go to cgmradio.com to see all the great shows on CGM and links to all of the articles discussed on this site. Have an amazing weekend, and may his kingdom come and his will be done on earth as it is in heaven.